From North State Public Radio, I'm Serena Grossi with your headlines for Wednesday, January 22nd. Small and rural schools may face funding shortages this year after a piece of legislation critical to funding them died in the U.S. House of Representatives. NSPR's Ken Duvall spoke with CalMatters education reporter Carolyn Jones about the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act, which provides funding to many schools in the North State.
It's been around for more than 100 years. It dates from the creation of the National Forest Service. At that time, the government came and basically took all this land in forested areas of California nationwide and put it into the Forest Service. And then so these local communities, they lost money on their tax rolls. They didn't have a means of raising money either because that land was no longer taxable. And so to compensate these local communities, the federal government agreed to give them a little extra money every year to pay for schools and roads and other things that they were missing out on. And as timber profits went down over time, the government started kind of supplementing that, the payments. And so now it's in the new version, it's called the Secure Rural Schools Act. And this year, for only the second time in recent memory, Congress has not approved it.
Why has Congress not approved it?
It's a bipartisan bill, and lawmakers from red states, blue states, you know, all throughout the country have supported it over the years. It's been fairly non-controversial. This time, there's so much rancor in Washington that this bill sort of got lost in the shuffle, it looks like. It passed unanimously in the Senate, and then House Speaker Mike Johnson did not put it forward for a vote in the House, so the bill died and is not part of the new budget. So there's lots of theories as to why that happened. The Republican leadership in Congress wouldn't answer questions about it, but I know that they're trying to cut back government spending generally, so it might have fallen victim to that. It could also be that rural America tends not to have a lot of voice in Congress, and certainly among the leadership, a lot of the congressional leaders are not from rural areas, and so they're not really affected by this, and so they don't hear about it from their constituents. And also the pressure, I think, from the incoming administration to cut federal spending is intense.
Could you talk a little bit about what these monies are used for?
Counties divide the money between schools and roads, typically public works projects. And so for schools, that funds everything from after school programs to fixing a leaky roof to buying playground equipment to hiring staff. Because the money's been fairly consistent over the years, superintendents have really come to rely on it. Rural schools typically are pretty financially strapped because they don't have the enrollment that, you know, suburban or urban schools have. And in California, schools get money based on enrollment, based on how many kids are in the seats. So that means these schools get less money from the state, but they tend to have high needs, like things are just more expensive in rural areas. Everything's more expensive. Gas is more expensive. It's more expensive to run a bus, for example, to really remote areas. I mean, so their costs are high and they have, you know, limited revenues. So rural schools really, really rely on this money.
You spoke with a number of administrators, school district administrators here in the North State. What was your general impression about their concerns?
They're worried. They're mad. They're nervous. They're hoping to God that this thing goes through. You know, in some counties, it's 5 or 6 or even 10% of their budget. And they really need that. They really rely on that money. So, yeah, people are really nervous about it.
That was CalMatters education reporter Carolyn Jones speaking with NSPR's Ken Duvall. In other news, President Donald Trump has made promises throughout his campaign to ramp up enforcement efforts against undocumented immigrants. But in California, local law enforcement is limited in how they can engage with federal immigration officials. NSPR's Anthony Vosick reports on how sheriffs in the North State say they'll respond.
Most sheriffs in the North State say they are planning to follow state law when it comes to cooperating with ICE. That's according to reporting by CalMatters. The nonprofit news outlet recently emailed the sheriff's departments of every California county to find out how they plan to navigate complex immigration laws under the new Trump administration. The sheriffs of Plumas, Glenn, Sutter, and Yuba counties all say they plan to abide by the California Values Act, passed in 2018. That act put several limitations on ICE activity in the state. For example, it prohibits local law enforcement from inquiring about a person's immigration status or arresting a person for only having a deportation order. They also cannot share personal information unless it is already publicly available online. Some sheriffs did also emphasize that state law allows for some cooperation with ICE, depending on the circumstances.
That was NSPR's Anthony Vosick. And it's been 6 years since the last Chico Zine Fair. Now, organizers at a new local art space are helping breathe new life into the project. NSPR's Eric Adams has more.
Think of a zine as a do-it-yourself, self-published magazine. All you need are simple stationery supplies like printer paper and staples. This weekend, zines from dozens of creators, illustrators, and comic artists will be on display. Maddie Hinckley is one of the event organizers and the president at Second Cousin, a recently opened art space in downtown that's hosting the fair.
A zine can be really casual, handwritten with a pencil, or it can be really glossy and beautiful and slick. It doesn't matter what it looks like. The ethos is about spreading information with your community.
The last Chico Zine Fair happened in 2019 at Blackbird Cafe. Blackbird's closure in 2020 and the COVID-19 pandemic helped lead to the 6-year gap between fairs. Hinckley hopes this zine can become an annual event going forward. The event is Saturday afternoon, and it will be at Second Cousin. In Chico, I'm Eric Adams.
And finally, more than half of Chico's residents have a daily commute that's 15 minutes or less, but about 80% of those trips are made using gas-powered vehicles. That's according to data from the U.S. Census Bureau. That doesn't necessarily fall in line with the city's climate action plan. It aims to reduce carbon emissions to below 1990 rates. Jesse Horgan, the parking services manager for Chico State, says switching to alternative modes of transportation would help the city reach that goal.
Public transport, carpooling, biking, walking, all the things that have been working forever and work in a lot of cities, those are the things that give you the best result.
Horgan says it's important for people to learn how bus and transit routes work and then try them a few times. That can make it easier to adapt to commuting sustainably. According to the Climate Action Plan, gas-powered vehicles make up nearly 40% of the city's total emissions. The city also aims to reduce gasoline and diesel fuels by 35% come 2030. And those were your headlines for Wednesday, January 22nd. Our theme song is Burrow and courtesy of Blue Dot Sessions. For more local and state news, you can visit our website, mynspr.org. For NSPR News, I'm Serena Grossi.